David, is cycling something that you did as a child and it just grew into this, I will call it maybe a passion, but you can tell me.
No, that's a great question. And I get it from others too. So interestingly, no. And yes, growing up in Michigan, yeah, bicycling was something I enjoyed to do. But I would say once I started college, there just wasn't that time. And so for me, there was a huge hiatus from, say, age about 18 all the way to age 50 with no bike riding, almost no bike riding whatsoever. And then here in Kentucky, when I turned 50, so 12 years ago, it seemed both my sons were then busy with their lives and high school and with their friends, that I told my wife that for my 50th birthday, I was going to buy a bicycle. And that's really when I started riding more so as an adult, and just took off from there, and just absolutely loved the freedom and the feel of being on a bicycle and traveling around. And as you know, Kentucky is just absolutely gorgeous. In fact, one of the most beautiful places I've ridden around the world is right here in the state of Kentucky.
Give me sort of a list of places you have ridden your bike outside of the United States, let's say.
Oh, gosh, outside of the United States, Randy has a good list, too. But I would say France, Italy, Thailand, now Vietnam and Cambodia with this trip, Canada. That's largely it, I think, outside of the United States.
That's impressive. Randy, the same question to you is, did you get started in cycling young? And how comparing to what David did, tell me a little bit about your cycling love.
Absolutely. Early in Michigan, I had a Schwinn Stingray. It was blue with a banana seat. I remember it vividly. But that was for just getting around and showing off and popping wheelies for the girls. But then I got a Schwinn Varsity. It was green. I remember that one. And I started to ride 3 to 5 miles and thought that I was going pretty far to the baseball stadium where I played. And then it wasn't until probably 1987, I think, when I got my bike. At the time, I had gained a bunch of weight, 25 pounds. I bought a bike in Redlands, California, Southern California, and rode it 3 miles home. And I fell on the grass and said, I'm going to die. And everything was spinning, and I was nauseated. I'd only ridden 3 miles, and I said, I am so out of shape. And that's when it all started, 25-pound weight loss in 2 months. And then over the next couple of years, ramped it up from 3, 10, 25, 50, 100 miles, and then started to do loops up in the mountains, climbing 7,000, 8,000 plus feet vertical. And that's where I felt free, where I felt peaceful, and where I decompressed. And I think David would probably share those same insights of what it's like to be out there. I have cycled in Italy several times in the Dolomiti Mountains, northern Italy. I've cycled in France several times, all the way from Geneva to Nice over the Alps, about 28 or 30 different cols or mountains. And with David, we did Vietnam and Cambodia. And in the United States, we've been lots of different places, Maine, Colorado, California, up and down the coast from Canada to Mexico. He and I rode last year. We can talk about that, too, if you like, but I'll finish there.
Awesome. David, what was it that connected you to the Unforgettables Foundation?
Well, that would be Randy, who helped to start this foundation a number of years ago, and he'll speak to a bit more. But I think to make the bridge in a story, so I was stepping down from being a chairman of medicine, Randy from chairman of anesthesiology. We're both thinking about how are we going to occupy ourselves as we try to think about retirement. And so Randy had convinced me to do this ride, which he wanted to do. He did the initial one. He'll tell you about, to raise money riding across the United States, west to east. And so he said, hey, how about if we do a similar ride, but we'll go north to south. And so that was my beginning with the Unforgettables last year. Randy's is far longer, and he can tell you some about that.
Randy?
Sure. The Unforgettables Foundation was actually started about 1999, 2000, 2001 era by a pediatric chaplain, Tim Evans, in Southern California. And sorry if you hear my golden barking in the background here, but he was a pediatric chaplain at Loma Linda University Medical Center and saw a need for families that had lost children and could not even afford to bury them, and also the need to try to prevent future deaths with things like pediatric CPR training, suicide prevention, et cetera. And in 2001, Tim Evans, who is very outgoing and very much into helping families, talked me into riding across the United States on my bike, 4,100 miles from west to east, just north of Seattle, Anacortes, Washington, to Bar Harbor, Maine. And I did that between the beginning of June and the end of July, 4,100 miles, with my wife and my 7-month-old son riding in an RV, and I'd meet them at night riding about 90 to 100 miles a day. So I got to sleep in an RV, but it was riding continuously day after day, about 90 to 100 miles a day. And it was a wonderful experience where we raised about $30,000 for the Unforgettables Foundation. As Tim Evans said, it got them started at the very beginning when they were down and out and didn't have much money. And now they have multiple chapters elsewhere. Now in 2021, it was 20 years later, Tim and I had been talking since we knew each other since college, Tim Evans being the pediatric chaplain and the founder and CEO of Unforgettables Foundation. And we'd been talking, probably 3 or 4 years before the 2021 trip that David and I took. And he suggested, hey, why don't you do another trip for us? And I said, boy, that'd be great. I said, I'd really like to do Canada to Mexico. And he said, well, we'd love to sponsor you and we could do a fundraiser and hit up your friends and family. And I said, well, that sounds good. And so in 2021, when some other bike rides fell through, I talked David into saying, let's go do Canada and Mexico. Would you do it with me? I really want to do it. And let's do it unsupported with a sleeping bag and a tent on the back. And let's go out there and do this 2,400 plus or minus miles. And David, being the friend that he is, said, absolutely. And it was just a wonderful experience starting just near the border of Canada. We flew into Seattle, took a bus up, got on our bikes, rode into the Cascades, rode down to Bend, Oregon, and unfortunately, because of the fires and smoke, had to go over to the coast and finish our ride all the way down the Oregon coast, the California coast, to San Diego, which was beautiful in and of itself, but not the originally planned trip, which was down all the way through the Cascades. Wonderful trip. We raised about $50,000 for the Unforgettables Foundation. And I was thankful that David accompanied me, and we spent many a night in campgrounds, in our tents, in 45-degree, 50-degree weather, but sleeping like, oh, it was so great out there. I did enjoy it.
Wow. You guys blow me away. How do you raise money, for example, for the Vietnam and Cambodia trip that you just got back from?
Yeah. So, great. So I guess following last year's ride, I kind of guilted Randy into joining me this year. I'd wanted to ride Vietnam and Cambodia, having not been there, but having ridden across Thailand. And so I asked Randy now if he would join me, and he was gracious to do that. And so we went back to Tim Evans and through the website. So the Unforgettables Foundation has a website. It's easy to find. It's just www.unforgettables.org. And so they do a number of events throughout the year, golf tournaments, things like that, to raise money. And they just used our bike ride as being one of them, where people can just go to the website, through a series of drop downs, can find the ride that Randy and I did, and people can either donate by mile or just give a dollar amount. So that's how we raised money. We have some business cards with the web address on it that we'd hand out to people who would ask us our story or ask us for information like that. Like Randy said, fortunately, there's chapters in Nevada, Ohio, Tennessee, and trying to get one started here in Kentucky. There are several chapters in Canada, so reached out to some of those chapters with our story. And I think Tim in the last week or two told me that so far this year we've raised around closer to $30,000, and we hope that continues as people go to the website and hopefully support the foundation.
Awesome. I wonder at the heart of it, the core of what strikes your heart with this organization, considering the fact that both of you have been, you know, in situations where you had lives, you know, literally in your hands, and you've seen both the good and bad in terms of that. I wonder, what is it at the heart of it, other than the bicycling, that connects you to this foundation in terms of children being buried? David?
Yeah, so good. So as you know, there's, you know, a substantial number of families here in Kentucky who just don't have the financial resources that, you know, others may have. And so there's a number of stories where we've seen people who, you know, they go through the devastation of losing a young child, but then, you know, right on the back of that, not being able to adequately fund a dignified burial. So one of the nice things with this foundation is the money goes directly to the funeral home, to the tab of the family to help offset that. And I don't know the numbers from Kentucky, but I know since the foundation's been started, they've helped over 8,000 families with helping to afford to bury their child. And so, you know, being a healthcare provider and watching the physical struggles of anyone, but then also seeing the social and family struggles of the anguish of not only, again, losing that child, but then having to afford the burial. So that's easy. That's the easy one. What tugs at our heartstrings? Just that. And so just being able to help these families out is really fantastic. And then for me, being able to ride my bike and doing so is even better.
Randy, you went to Vietnam and Cambodia. For people that are going to think, well, they just rode their bike and they, well, you know, would stop where they wanted, and, you know, they don't understand the support. Would you briefly talk about the support that you had on this trip to make this happen?
Would it be okay if I went back and answered what David talked about?
Sure.
To add
sure.
To that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have a little bit different reason for why it tugs at my heartstrings, and there's some personal attachment to this. In 1992, my wife was pregnant, lost a pregnancy, and became very depressed and committed suicide in 1992. And I took a year off of my life and in grief and went through some of the things what I think some of these families go through and personally experienced, got back to work, got remarried in 1994 and been married for 28 years to a beautiful person, my wife currently. And we had multiple pregnancies lost after that time. And I kept thinking of all these people that have lost children and what I went through. And when Tim talked with me about it, it just connected in a way that I could, in some ways in my heart, memorialize my wife and also help families and connect that with my love for cycling. And I think it was Frederick Buechner said, that when you can, you'll find purpose in life basically when you connect where you find great joy with the world's needs. And I find great joy in cycling, and I connected with the world's needs in this, and I find purpose that way. And so that's my addition to that.
That's incredible. Thank you for telling us that and being so open to that. That's unreal. Talk about, Randy, the support on this trip.
Would you clarify just a bit, support financially, support otherwise?
Bike mechanic, tour guide,
sure.
Food. Now, just again, briefly, but give people an idea, because most people that listen to this will have no idea the support you had during the ride.
Well, first of all, I'd like to start with David and our wife supported us in allowing us to go for a month away from home. That was a big support. David knows a lot about bike mechanics and really helped me get my stuff together and box it up. We had to box up our bikes and ship them over and put them back together over there. We did have a bike mechanic as part of our group to help us. When we did our trip north to south, Canada to Mexico, we took some food and took all of our stuff to repair our own bikes. In Vietnam, Cambodia, we did have some assistance and something really bad happened. A mechanic was along as part of the group to help out if something occurred that we could not fix or David could not fix. So our trip in Vietnam, Cambodia was about 65 to 105 miles a day. And there was food support, like in the middle of the day, there would be a place where you could get a sandwich and something to drink and head off again and finish up another 50 miles or so. And we would stop. What was so much fun is to stop in the little Vietnamese villages and get a Coca-Cola or something, or a coffee at their little stands at their homes, where each of them would have, many of their little homes would have places where they'd sell cold drinks or coffee or tea or whatever. And, it was actually, I think, more fun stopping and trying to talk with some of these people than it was, you know, stopping at a regular store or something. And so we would stop regularly for drinks along the way, if we could find them. But we did have support. We did stay in hotels. We can talk about that if you like. And I'll tell you a story about one of them. On the border of Cambodia and Vietnam, I walked in and there was a beetle the size of half my hand, it seemed like, on the floor, first of all. And then there was lots of bugs, and it was a communist hotel. And there's bugs everywhere. And I sprayed DEET on my bed, sprayed DEET on my clothes, and then slept on top of the bed because I was a little bit worried. But that was that was an exception to most of them. Most of them were okay. Just very different in the fact that the way they're set up over there. But seeing a different culture was fun. And we did have good support from our families for food and from bike mechanics. And David can add on to that, I'm sure.
David?
Yeah, I think, yeah, Randy described it well. I think it was completely different from last year. So Canada to Mexico, we would ride basically until we were about ready to drop. And as it got dark, we would find a campground or somewhere to, you know, to stay the night. You know, this one, obviously, because neither of us speak Vietnamese or Cambodian, we went with a group that nicely organized hotels in advance. So we always knew how far we were going and where we were going to stay. And then it was on us every fourth or fifth day to figure out where we were going to do laundry, whether it was in the sink in the hotel room or to find a local laundry. But otherwise, they were gracious. The organizers of this trip, TDA Cycling, or stands for Tour de Afrique, they organized the hotels, and the hotels would almost always have breakfast the following morning. Like Randy said, we would get snacks or lunch along the way, and then we would find dinner either at the hotel or somewhere in the community in which we were staying.
How many days and miles did you actually go on this trip, David?
Bye. Yeah, good. So this was about a 4-week trip. And so the entire group, it's more meant to be transcontinental. They went for around 8 weeks. We joined them for the four, again, Vietnam and Cambodia. We averaged about 80 miles a day. We rode, I think, for around 19 days. We went a little bit under 1,500 miles, as Randy said, anywhere from about 65. I think our most was 105 miles, but the average per day was around 80 miles, which, if it was flat terrain and a moderate temperature, was lovely. But there were some days where it was a lot of potholes and dirt roads and heavy rain and high winds. So we had a variety of environments and locations.
We've got about 15 minutes. Randy, talk about, just describe, because we won't be able to see it, at least in the radio piece, what was it like in the mountains and the cities? Because some of the cities you went through were pretty congested, and then the mountains, they looked pretty formidable, but I wasn't on a bike.
Yes. I'll start with the cities, and I was very surprised and actually astounded at Hanoi when I got there, because there was traffic going every which direction. And if you just imagine people coming from everywhere, going into a roundabout, five lanes, and then suddenly just splitting off every which direction, people coming at you, with you, across you. I didn't know how to bicycle in that, and I was a little bit worried when I got started. But I realized that it's like a swimming fish in a school. If you just follow the school, don't make any abrupt stops or turns, you're usually okay. And I actually learned by the end of the trip, when to cross a street in a major city in Vietnam or Cambodia, you just have to start walking in faith. And you start walking out, and people just kind of go around you, but you don't stop. You don't look left or right. You just keep walking, and they go around you. And David commended me at the end. He said, boy, you sure have changed from the way you first started. So cities I found very congested, very difficult to learn to ride in initially, and a bit worried about getting in an accident, although it never happened. While in the mountains were much steeper than engineered mountains in the United States. And this is what I found interesting. In the United States, you know, you go to Colorado and you ride 6 to 8% grades are considered pretty steep. Well, there was points where we were doing up to 16% grades. Woo. And in rain, and if it was in a good road, that would be wonderful. But there often was just dirt or broken up asphalt. And when you got to the top of one of the mountains, I remember one day, it was monsoon rains blowing at you. And by the time you got down to the other side, it was very cold, actually. So the combination of winds and rains and broken up roads, there was times where we rode across little streams, rutted out dirt roads. And some of my most fondest memories were riding through small villages on little roads that were probably only, David, maybe 10 feet wide or 12 feet wide, maybe at most. And seeing all the people, and the kids would know one word, and it was hello. And they would yell hello out to you as you went past and smiled big. And I love that part. And so the people were friendly. The roads were terrible. The culture was amazing. And I would have to say that the mountain riding, the difference from the U.S., from Italy, from France, and places I've ridden, had to do more with the condition of the roads, the vertical ascent, percent climbs, and the beauty. As you looked off in the distance, sometimes you'd see water, jungle, and some places we're at were pretty out there where we weren't near anything, any major city. And I enjoyed the feeling of just being out there. It didn't feel dangerous at all.
You got that covered. Thank you, Randy. David, I'm just a little bit older than the two of you, but my generation, your generation, of course, dealt with the Vietnam War. Whether we were there or not, we knew it was going on. And I wonder how welcomed you felt in Vietnam, because we have that history with that country of conflict and death and battle and tragedy.
Yeah, good, thanks. Certainly I had some sensitivity in talking to people a little bit older than I am. They gave me some caution or concern when they learned I was going to Vietnam. You know, having said that, there was very rare times where I felt uncomfortable, and it was in part because of maybe my interactions with somebody who was in their 70s or maybe early 80s that I knew that they were alive and in that era and wondered how they thought of me. But I never felt unsafe beyond that. Like Randy was saying, I think, you know, many of the interactions we had were with people who were our age or younger who didn't know the Vietnam War era, or it had so long passed they had forgotten about it. And, you know, Cambodia has its history too with the French and with other foreigners. But I will say that I don't think anyone in our group ever felt uncomfortable. There were people with whom we were riding who were from Canada or France or other places. And I don't think anyone ever felt that uncomfortable during our time.
Randy, from your standpoint on that, I'm curious if there was any evidence of even a war being there from what you saw.
Sure. And I'll just add that the kids would say hello and smile at you, but I had quite a few kids that also, I'll just add, flip me off and then would be smiling. And I thought, man, they must be watching US TV or something. You know, I mean, where are they getting that from? Because they looked happy. Yeah. And we're doing that. And I didn't quite understand what the meaning was. And so that made me a little uncomfortable, but not feeling unsafe. There was no evidence of war other than in Hanoi. There was some old remnants of planes. We actually took a Jeep tour in an old Jeep of that era, where we saw some planes, tanks and things. We saw some of the buildings. We saw the mausoleum where Ho Chi Minh was interned, and that brought back, you know, some historical memories for me, not personal memories. Obviously, I was just way too young. But I did not feel an animosity from the people at all. Mm-hmm. I cannot say I felt it ever.
The killing fields, I don't know much about it except just the two words are something I do remember from Cambodia. Did you go anywhere near that? Either one of you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. We spent a day touring the killing fields, first of all, at the museum where people were brought, tortured, kept chained to beds, beaten nearly to death, sometimes to death, water tortured, and then taken at nighttime to the killing fields where they took us by bus and showed us where they would club them in the head with different types of instruments when they would fall into a puddle, basically, or a big old ditch. And they had 17,000 skulls there and turned into a monument. Oh. And as we walked through the killing fields where it had rained over the last couple of days, you could see remnants of clothes coming up from the ground, pieces of bone coming up from the ground still from that era. And it is just sickening.
Oh. Well, we've got about 6 minutes, and I want to end on a little bit more positive note, but I had to ask about that. I'll start with David, and then Randy, you can pitch in. What you did is extraordinary, and what you have done in cycling, just from a fitness standpoint. I just wonder, David, if this has all changed you in any way or emboldened you to do more and looking ahead.
So this particular trip, I think, is been helpful. It's just another time to get out and to do what I enjoy riding, but yet see other parts of the country, help to raise money for this charity. Oh, yeah, I do think you get emboldened in some ways in that, you know, I think all of us remember those times when we were in particularly good shape and how good you feel during that time, maybe in your youth. But I have to say, when I'm physically fit, I feel really good in general. So as again, I approach retirement, I find that as I stay more physically fit, about midway through these trips, in fact, I start to feel more invincible, perhaps like I felt when I was a teenager. And so I do enjoy that. It's just the idea of being able to do that. The other fun thing is you can eat as much as you want, basically, because you're burning so many calories. And yet do this with a purpose, you know, not only helping myself, but helping others.
Randy, same question to you.
And Sam, I'll add to that I developed a better appreciation and understanding for several cultures, the Vietnamese and the Cambodian cultures. And I realized a new appreciation for happiness without things. And many of the families there, they were getting together, eating together. They were very simple homes and, you know, their animals living underneath their homes and things. And their kids looked happy. They seemed happy. And they were there together as a family. And I thought, wow, no cell phones held up or, you know, they're doing things together as a family. Maybe we could learn something from that here in the U.S. I don't know, but I think so. And Embolden, absolutely. Every time I take a trip like this, whether alone, I've done San Francisco to Seattle to San Francisco alone with a sleeping bag. I've done alone the Skyline and Blue Ridge Mountains, but I much enjoy doing it with David. But I'm emboldened now to go off on even a longer trip someday and maybe even less supported, because that feeling of peace that you get out there when you're on your bike, I can't even describe it. All I can say is that it's there. It's wonderful. It's freedom when I get out there. And it's part of that living life to the fullest and living without regret that I've always had as a mantra in my life.
It doesn't sound like either one of you have any plans of stopping anytime soon. David?
Well, that's true. In fact, we're thinking about what we're going to do next year in 2023. And I will say that we've both already committed in 2024 to circumnavigate Morocco. So that'll take about 5 weeks, but we're already in the planning phases to ride around the northwest corner of Africa.
Randy, you're in on all this, I guess?
Absolutely. The wilder, the better to a point. You know, as long as I can convince my wife to let me go. another thing I really want to do is Transamerica, which was the trail that was established in 1976, which goes from Oregon to Virginia, basically. And the reason why is I really want to go across Colorado, Montana, and some of those areas. And I'm thinking about trying to do it in an ultralight bike setup where you do maybe 100 to 200, up to 200 miles a day to see if I could actually do that. And I know David may not want to sign on to that one because he enjoys more stopping and seeing things than I do. He says, well, we need to have some more lowest moments, which is my wife, because my wife encourages me to stop and smell the roses and I'm more go, go, go. And he's correct. But I have that as a dream, doing Transamerica at speed, see how fast I can do it.
Well, gentlemen, thank you so much. I'm inspired. I was a triathlete for 10 years. I did Ironman, but man, what you got, but what you guys have done over the course of the many years is just incredible. And it's an honor and a privilege to tell your story. Thank you. I know you're both very busy, but you obviously love what you're doing and love writing, and more power to you.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
All right. I'll be in touch on the airtime and everything. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, Randy.
See you, David.